Chapter 10. To see a Jedi take up his lightsaber against civilians is shocking. But to see the son and nephew of the leader of the Jedi Council doing it is heartbreaking. Master Silgall, Jedi High Council. Perimeter Fence, Arcanian Microtechnologies, Vohai, Parmal Sector, 1600 hours. The bigger companies grew, the more complacent their security became. Fett could remember when Arcanian Micro was a tough nut to crack. He knelt on one knee in the cover of bushes and used the scope of his EE-3 blaster to observe employees passing through the security gate.
"I could be useful," said the voice in his helmet comlink.
"Stay off this channel."
"Women can get access to places that men often can't."
Myrta was persistent. Fett bristled.
"You'll spend the journey back in the cells if you don't shut up."
She was still locked inside Slave One, hidden in the cover of a disused silo a kilometer away, confined to the crew section this time. She couldn't activate the ship's drives, but Fett had left a couple of comlink channels unguarded. If she was any good, she'd find them. And if she was double-crossing him, she'd use them, and then he'd know who she was working with. So far, all she had done was call him.
"Okay," she said, apparently unperturbed. "I'll stand by."
The only person Fett had ever trusted was his father. Neither of them was a natural team player. He could handle command when he had to, but he liked working alone. And the current task was at case in point. He could either talk his way into Arcanian Micro, or he could do what he did best, which was to observe, identify the weak point, infiltrate by force, and take what he needed. Talking wasn't his strong point. The staff moved in and out. A security guard on the gate and two sentinel droids scrutinized each individual going in and coming out, sweeping them with sensors. Arcanian Micro had once buried its most sensitive laboratories in the polar ice of the planet, but now it seemed to prefer the softer suburbs and landscaped business parks. Fat and lazy. It was cheaper to build on the surface. Vohai hadn't suffered at the hands of the Yuuzhan Vong, and it had grown complacent. That was just what Fat needed. He liked companies with tough security best, though, because they provided a handy pointer to the target. You didn't protect what you didn't value most. Let's look for a few clues. Kaminoans wouldn't stroll out through the gates with a lunchbox under one arm. Kaminoans liked cold, wet gloom. Vohai was pleasantly sunny much of the year. Fett called up the aerial view of the micro-complex on his HUD, and worked out where he would place an office to ensure it had no natural light. The layout, as seen in the frame that Slave One scanners had grabbed before landing, showed a sprawl of building that was essentially a square core with a lot of thin arms radiating off it, and many courtyards. Humans, most species in fact, liked bright natural light to work in. "But you wouldn't want one of those nice courtyard offices, would you, town wee?" So somewhere in the square heart of the complex, not on the periphery or in the strings of buildings that ran from it, was a lab or an office that a Kaminoan would feel at home in.
"Me too. Not the rain so much as the plain walls and the lack of clutter."
He thought of the simple toys and his austere childhood home, and knew why possession seemed a burden he didn't really want.
"She's probably in there right now, building more clones. If she raises the alarm when she sees you, would you shoot her? Shoot someone old and weak."
He set his visor to full-range magnification by tapping the control plate on his left forearm. He preferred that to the blink-activated HUD system, and tried to get a better line of sight into the security booth at the gate. They were bound to have some repeater system, Every security station needed to be able to communicate with the rest. That meant there might be an indication of floors below ground. From the air, only single-story buildings were visible. He needed to know if he faced a more complex layout once inside. It wasn't a good idea to get pinned down below ground level. Fett needed a better observation point. He looked around, calculating the angle of elevation he needed to get a clear view through the transparisteel window. If he sent a remote in closer, it would be spotted. He'd do this the old-fashioned way. Backing out of the bushes, he walked 100 meters to the next lot and checked out the roofline. Fine. Plenty of flat-topped warehousing to choose from. He slipped between two buildings, took out his rappelling line, and then decided a simple burn with the jetpack would save his shoulders a lot of wear and tear. He was up on the roof in under 3 seconds, lying flat and peering down the scope of the blaster to get a better look inside the security booth. There was a status screen on the guard's desk, all right. He eased along to the far edge of the roof on his belly and racked up the scope's magnification. The image shimmered, unsteady at that range, but he could see a grid of white lines on a blue background with green lights winking at points along the grid. Probably intruder sensors. There was nothing that indicated multiple layers. One level. So far, so good. The next step was to work out how the building was organized. And all that took was a little guesswork backed up by information that was usually public. Fett lowered himself from the roof on his rappel line, letting the pulley take the strain, flicked the cord clear, and settled down in the shelter of waste storage sheds to browse the local comlink directory system from his datapad. It was fascinating to see how much information one could put together just by seeing how companies listed their departmental comlink numbers. Names and numbers scrolled across the screen of his pad. Arcanian Microtechnologies. Deliveries, Personnel Services, Public Affairs and Investor Relations. He scrolled farther. What was Town Wee's specialty? Developmental Sciences and Education. Town Wee was an expert in human psychology. She knew enough about humans to make sure the ones the Kaminoans bred under the most unnatural conditions imaginable were conditioned enough to prevent them from becoming basket cases. She wouldn't be splicing DNA. She'd have brought her little case of data chips with her as some kind of employment dowry. And Microtech would have been glad to have that data, but her day-to-day work, the work she loved doing, was making sure clones didn't go crazy. Profiling, testing, flash teaching, accelerated socialization, giving clones the right attitude to be useful tools. Hi, Town Wee. I hope you're enjoying your new job. Thad could have waited to see when she came out, almost certainly by vehicle, probably obscured from view, and followed her to wherever she called home. But it wasn't that much harder to walk in and find her. If he could get close enough to the building, he could use the penetrating terahertz radar sensor in his helmet's visor to look for a long body with pockets of low-density tissue, quite distinct from a human radar profile. It could see through walls. Infrared couldn't. And it had been a long time since he had broken into a laboratory for data retrieval. A bounty hunter had to keep his skills sharp. Galactic Alliance Guard HQ, Quadrant A-89, Galactic City, 0830 hours. Jason came out of the GAG briefing room to find Mara standing with her hands on her hips, as if he'd kept her waiting a little too long. She looked more under control than relaxed. Her expression was carefully neutral. But he could feel the fear in her and see the dark circles under her eyes. She stared.
"When did you start wearing a uniform?"
Jason glanced down at his black fatigues, hands held away from his sides.
"I should have changed before we carried out the raids. Jedi robes and police actions don't mix.
You're telling me? Luke's going crazy.
emergency meeting of the High Council right now, in fact.
I meant that all that loose fabric is... never mind.
Luke's reaction was predictable. Jedi couldn't be seen getting their hands dirty, and certainly not his son.
You know why we wore robes originally? To fit in with the ordinary people. So I'm fitting in now, with my people.
Mara indicated her own battle jacket.
Sorry, Jason. It's just a shock to see you in that uniform.
I'm a colonel now.
I'm not arguing. I just wanted to talk to you before Luke finds you. Is Ben okay?
He did very well. You want to see him? He's in the briefing room. We're just doing a wash-up with the squad leaders to work out what we'll do differently next time. And watching the news on the hour, of course.
Mara managed not to raise an eyebrow.
There's going to be a next time, then.
You turned the job down. What did you think?
That it was going to be dirty.
It is. But churning through war after war because we don't ever fully deal with unrest is a lot dirtier.
The briefing room doors slid open, and a corporal from 967 Commando, LeCauf, stuck his head out.
"Say, you're on again,"
he said with a grin.
"Sorry, ma'am. HNE News."
"Don't let me interrupt you," said Mara. "Just passing."
Jason took her arm.
"Come in and meet my men."
He wanted to reassure her about Ben. Unlike Luke, she didn't seem to want her son to be her little replica. She knew how to let go. She recoiled visibly at the sight of Ben in black fatigues. He was sitting at the table with Shavu and the sergeants, cup of calf in one hand and data pad in the other, and even his body language had suddenly become adult. He was mirroring the adult males around him without even realizing. When he stood up to greet Mara, it struck Jason that Ben would soon be as tall as he was.
"Ma'am,"
said Ben, all grave concentration. Not Mom. Ma'am.
"I didn't sense you coming. I just dropped by to say that I watched the Hollow News and I wanted to see how you were feeling,"
said Mara.
"Are you all right, son?"
"Yes, he isn't your sweetheart when he's in uniform, 13 years old or not." Jason watched the unspoken interaction between them and detected the concern flowing both ways like a faint breeze. But whatever anxiety Mara had brought in with her had vanished and had been replaced almost completely by relief.
"Apart from getting up at 0200, I'm fine."
"You're getting so military."
Mara managed to grin.
"You sure you're okay?"
"Why shouldn't I be? It wasn't dangerous, like the assault on Centerpoint. Captain Shavu was watching my six."
Jason found it touching that Ben had formed a bond with the 967. It boded well. Shavu was doing a fine job of stifling a smile, and his emotions, tired relief at the end of an operation and a pleasant affection for Ben, were probably obvious only to Jason's fine-tuned force senses.
"Here we go,"
said LeCauf, and turned up the audio on the briefing room's holoscreen. The image flashed up the tagline, "Crackdown," at the bottom of the screen, and HNE anchors went into a recap of the morning's raid on Jobby Town. 4 hours after the raids, the news emphasis had turned from the drama of hovering assault ships and commandos breaching doors to public reaction. Admiral Neothel contributed a 30-second defense of the GAG's actions. 967 Commando was, after all, now part of her special operations forces, but it didn't appear that defense was necessary. Jason, braced for opprobrium, was taken aback by the reactions of Coruscanti as for their opinion on the streets and walkways of Galactic City.
"It's about time," said one man in a business suit. "I think Colonel Solo did what we should have done a long time ago. We're too scared of upsetting other governments."
"Well, Corellia, not anymore,"
Mara murmured, faintly sarcastic.
"Ooh, you've got fans."
"Didn't plan that."
"I know."
"I hope Luke sees it that way, too,"
said Jason, knowing that he wouldn't.
"And Admiral Neothel."
I'll try convincing him.
Jason beckoned her out of the way of the soldiers, who were staring fixedly at the news coverage with the air of men who knew that public perception was as much a part of the war as any weapon they carried.
"Tell me straight, Ma, are you still happy for me to be training, Ben?"
She brushed a loose strand of hair from her eyes in a way that suggested she was buying a few seconds of thinking time.
Even Mara's wary of my reading her emotions.
"I think it's hard to accept that my little boy's turned into a soldier overnight. But that's something I should have seen coming when we wanted him to be trained as a Jedi."
Jason still felt a flutter of hesitation around her.
"I know you're still troubled by all this."
"Okay, let me ask you a question."
"Go ahead." Mara's eyes were fixed on his now.
"Is there someone in your life who's causing you some pain?"
"I don't understand."
He really didn't.
"A woman. Jason, I'm not prying. I just need to know if you're having a difficult time."
He thought of Tenel Ka and Alana. He hardly dared do that these days, in case Lumia sensed his secret and they were put in danger. More danger than they were already in.
"Yes."
It was so true that it hurt.
"There's someone I would like to be with that I can't."
Mara exuded pure relief. The frown lines between her eyebrows vanished, and she almost smiled.
"That's all I needed to know, Jason. I'm sorry you're having problems. I won't mention it again, but if I can do anything, you let me know, okay?"
Jason nodded. He couldn't imagine anything that Mara could do. But it was comforting to know she was willing.
"Thanks, Mara," he said. "You're probably about my only friend these days."
She shrugged and waved discreetly to Ben before disappearing through the doors. Jason could guess what was happening in the council chamber without using his force senses to listen. He'd let the side down. Jedi didn't raid people's homes with black-clad shock troopers.
"A Jedi's job is to solve a problem without taking lives. I think I did that today. Sitting back and not getting involved while people get killed in an endless cycle of wars doesn't count as not having blood on your hands."
Jason was jerked out of his thoughts by a cup of calf being thrust in front of him.
"I don't think things are quite that bad, sir."
It was Corporal LeCalf, young, sandy-haired, and solidly optimistic. Jason accepted the calf, and they both stood watching the HNE coverage of the raids again. The outraged reaction from the Corellian ambassador and senators, and the imminent threat of severing diplomatic relations.
"I'm never sure if all this is aimed at Coruscant or the Alliance," said LeCalf. "Separating the two is a real political conjuring trick. I'd rather see more unity than separation, sir."
"Me too." Jason found he enjoyed the company of 967. They all had the corporal's general optimism.
"How long have you been in the Army?"
"Since I graduated, sir. 4 years."
"What made you sign up?"
LeCalf smiled, almost embarrassed.
"My grandfather served under your grandfather in the Imperial Army, sir. He always talked about how Lord Vader put himself in the front line. Meant a lot to him, that did."
Jason patted LeCalf's shoulder. It was humbling to see how loyalty could last generations. Whatever sins Anakin Skywalker had committed as Vader, there were still those who recognized his qualities as an inspirational commander. Jason decided it might be safe to walk back in time and watch him again. He wasn't repeating his mistakes. He was simply building on Anakin Skywalker's missed opportunities.
"Let's make our grandfathers proud, then."
Der Gedgen's house, Coronet Corellian. That Gedgen kid didn't seem quite so pleased to see Han this time. "You going to invite us in?" Han filled his doorway, blaster held at his side, and Gedgen stared at it wide-eyed. "We're feeling kind of unwelcome out here." Gedgen stood back, eyes still on the blaster, as Han and Leia slipped into his hallway. Han flicked on the safety.
"Where have you been?"
asked Gedgen.
"We ran into a well-wisher and had to make a run for it," said Leia, And before you ask, yes, we know what's happening on Coruscant. Sal Solo is having a field day with it.
Two small children emerged behind Gedgen, and he shooed them back into the room.
The Solo's son imprisoning innocent Corellians. Inspiring headlines.
Han snorted. I'm glad I don't shock easy. Does this mean he's changed the contract on me to read extra dead?
Us,
Leia muttered. Gedgen ushered them into his front room, and Han noted that the blinds were drawn.
Where are you staying?
Han didn't sit down, despite the mute offer of a chair. That's our little secret.
Okay.
Gedgen didn't appear offended. Paranoia seemed a normal part of political life.
My sources say there's more than one taker for the contract.
Fat doesn't play well with others.
Told you it wasn't Fat, said Leia. Fat or no Fat, Captain Solo, the threat is real. And while we're appalled at what your son appears to be doing, Thrakken Sal Solo is pursuing his line for his own ends, not Corellia's. So as far as we're concerned, we still have common cause.
Whose we?
The Democratic Alliance. We understand how hard it is for you.
You think?
You're here, aren't you? We know you put Corellia first.
I'm going to deal with Thrakken myself, thanks.
We can't be seen to do that, of course. But we can probably give you useful support.
You load the blaster and I fire it. Yeah, I get the idea. I just need times, locations, and access. Han was aware of Leia staring at his back, a kind of sixth sense that owed nothing to the Force and everything to more than 30 years of marriage. He turned slowly, expecting to see a weary frown of disapproval, and saw only wide-eyed resignation. Sometimes she looked just the way she had when he first met her. "Just keep feeding me information about Thrakken's location," said Han. "Your party representatives have access to that, right?"
"When he's taking part in government business, yes. Itineraries, meetings, that kind of detail."
"Good.
So what's your plan?"
Han gave him a slow, wary smile. "If I told you that, you wouldn't be able to deny involvement, would you?" Gedgen went to a desk in the corner of the room and took a data chip from a drawer.
"Floor plans," he said. "Government buildings. They're not illegal, just only available for inspection in libraries and civic offices. They might be useful."
"Consider me a librarian."
"Dear," said Leia, "if Thrakken Sal Solo were to fall from power, would your party be in a position to form an emergency government?"
Gedgen was now focused totally on Leia. That was what really interested him, the seizure of power. Han chose not to be offended.
"With my colleagues, the Corellian Liberal Front, and those in the Centerpoint Party who'd like a change of leadership, yes."
"So that's how a coup happens. In some guy's living room while his kids are playing in another room. Hey, you telling everyone my cousin's days are numbered?"
"If you think you're the first person this year to come up with the idea of neutralizing him, you'd be very much mistaken," said Gedgen. "Corellia doesn't want to be his personal toolbox any longer." "We'll keep contact to a minimum,"
Leia interrupted,
"and we'll keep changing our comlink code. I hope the next time we meet is when the crisis has passed."
Leia herded Han out into the street, and they walked a tortuous path to the center of Coronet, doubling back on themselves to check that they weren't being followed. There was a lot of air traffic heading into the spaceport, and a general buzz of tension in the city itself. It felt like a world bracing itself for the worst. They came into the main boulevard where the apartment rental office was located. They'd lease something small and anonymous in the center of town, Han decided. Something nobody would expect the Solos to want to live in. "It's just like old times again, living on the edge. Do you think Gedgen's cronies are setting me up to do their dirty work?" he asked.
"What, that the assassination contract is a ruse?"
Leia shook her head.
"You heard Jason. You saw the Hala news. And there's the small business of the guy we shoved out the airlock."
"Oh, yeah, him."
"I'm not encouraging you to do this."
"But you haven't told me not to."
"'I'm not making your decisions for you, Han. "'I'm your wife, not your mother,' Leia said.
"'But you're a Jedi, too.
"'It sounds like a case of self-defense to me.
"'Not a coup.
"'That's a separate issue.'
"'Diplomacy's a fascinating spectator sport,' Han said.
"'It's about managing the inevitable with minimum loss of life.'
"'Yeah, ours.' Han cared about Corellia in that abstract way people did when their home, even their unhappy home, was being attacked by outsiders. He'd never thought of himself as a patriot. He simply felt Corellian to the core. But there was one thing that still drove him above all others, and that was Leia and the kids.
"'Thraken doesn't stand a chance of taking three Jedi,' said Leia, as if she did a little telepathy on the side. "'It's you I'm worried for.'
"'Jedi have been known to get killed.'
"'It's not very gracious of me, but I kind of wish Jason had shot him after all.'
"'You and me both.' The rental agency office was crowded when Han and Leia reached it. There was a line of people, some with young children, some elderly, waiting with bags and cases of varying sizes.
"'You just arrived from Coruscant, too,'
said the harassed-looking woman at the main desk.
Well, Han didn't get the impression that she recognized him as public enemy number one. Yeah, we just got in.
"'You're ahead of the rush, then,'
she handed him a data pad.
"'Register your details. We've only got one-bedroom apartments left. Will that be okay?'
Han glanced at Leia. "'We just want a roof over our hands,' she told the woman.
"'We're all shocked at what's happening on Coruscant, ma'am. But you're safe now. Who'd have thought it? Han Solo's son, too.'
"'Yeah, we're shocked, too,' said Han, and meant it.
They signed a lease as Jav and Laura Kabadi, and found themselves disguised, quite by accident, as just one couple in the first wave of Corellians fleeing Coruscant to avoid internment. The irony wasn't lost on them.
"'Nice timing, son,' Han muttered.
Senate Chamber, Coruscant. Emergency debate on internment policy. Jason sat next to Neothel on the Mon Calamari delegates platform and listened to Corellia's Senator Char haranguing Chief Omis about the abuse of human rights on Coruscant and the lack of consultation with the Senate.
"'We have no option but to withdraw our ambassador,'
said Char.
"'Is that Coruscant or the Alliance we're talking about?'
Omis asked. Char hesitated.
"'Isn't that one and the same, Chief of State?'
"'I think the Honorable Representative for Corellia understands that the action I took was to ensure the safety of Coruscant citizens, which is a responsibility given to me by the Coruscanti local authority, and so does not require sanction by the Senate.' "'So which entity do you wish to withdraw representation from?'
There was a general murmur of support, but significant scoffing from some of the Outer Rim delegates. Omis stood his ground. At the moment, Corellia's allies were a minority, but that would change unless they were given a good reason not to line up behind her.
"'How do you feel about that blockade, Admiral?'
Jason asked quietly. Senatorial platforms detached from the walls of the massive chamber and hovered into the void between them for delegates to deliver impassioned but non-committal speeches against terrorism and the need for unity.
"'Are you asking if I could mount one now?'
"'I'm assuming you can. Do you still favor one?'
"'Yes, because that's the most robust stance I can persuade the Senate to allow.' "'And blockades are very flexible responses,'
Neothel said.
"'If it were carried out on behalf of the Alliance, that is. "'We live in a world of blurred lines.'
"'The debate was remarkably subdued, all things considered. "'Jason began to wonder if the backlash he had expected "'was actually his fear of the Jedi Council's opinion. "'If anything, he appeared to be
popular. That didn't make him comfortable. He wanted to remain aloof from anything that might sway him, and even a Jedi could enjoy being liked a little too much. Jason and Neothel joined Domus in the Chief of State's cabinet room, where Senator Gassil was already waiting. Omus didn't look happy, and sat down at the head of the lapis-inlaid table with slow deliberation.
"Well, let's be grateful today's events went as well as they did."
Gassil looked up.
"Where are we housing the internees?"
"Just over half of them had Corellian passports in the end, so we've put them in an old barracks block for the time being," said Neothel. "The rest were allowed to return to their homes. The question is how far we plan to go with this, because we have a lot of Corellian citizens resident here. And if we have to intern them all by force, it's going to be a labor-intensive job."
"Immigration reports, growing numbers looking to leave."
"I'm getting very uneasy about this, Admiral," said Omus.
"The images on HNE might have played well to the jingoistic element on Coruscant, but it reminded a lot of us of Imperial excesses."
"You authorized the action."
Neothel fixed Omus with that head-tilted stare.
"What did you expect it to remind you of?"
Jason cut in. Neothel had dispensed with any pretense of disinterest in Omus's job the moment she had been appointed Supreme Commander. She was going for broke.
"We're simply doing the same as the terrorists, except we cause no serious casualties," said Jason. "A small action creating a disproportionately large impact. This is as much a propaganda war as anything."
"You planned to scare Corellians out?"
Neothel lowered her voice.
"No. We planned to make it clear we would deal with threats to the population of Coruscant."
"And that's why you go in and do your own sleight of hand, is it?"
Omus was addressing his remarks to Neothel, even though it had been Jason's operation.
"One massive overreaction makes it look as if you have the whole situation under control."
"If that's how you want to see it, Chief Omus, yes,"
Jason answered.
"It's me you're dealing with, not Neothel. No deaths. A reassured public. A clear statement to any who want to kill and maim civilians that they won't be tolerated. Removing truly dangerous individuals from our streets, and also sending a message that if Corellia can be stopped from pursuing a destructive path at the expense of the common good, then any world can. Or would you rather let the enemies within erode our society? These are people who are happy to accept the benefits of being a Coruscant resident, an Alliance citizen, but don't want the effort of being loyal to it. If that's my sleight of hand, then I'll sleep soundly tonight."
Omus looked about to speak, but simply glanced down at his hands, as if making a conscious effort not to respond. He was too wily a politician to take on both Jason and Neothel in front of Gassil. If he lost, Gassil would smell blood.
"If you'll excuse me, I have to talk to the Corellian Embassy."
Omus stood up and walked to the doors.
"I'd appreciate a schedule of your next operations in advance."
Gassil watched him go.
"It's always a shame when HNE isn't here to record a really great speech."
"No, Senator, that's not the game I'm playing. You have no idea, do you? No idea at all."
"You might be surprised to know I meant every word," said Jason. "I know what a war looks like, and I want this one to be the last one."
Gassil seemed to take his comment as youthful sincerity.
"Now there's a wish with a lot of meanings," he said. "Let me go and calm Omus down. He's finding it hard to adjust to Jedi who aren't nice, tidy parts of the High Council. Funny how we can attack Corellian territory without turning a hair, but we lose our nerve when we kick down a few doors on our home turf."
"I never wanted to take on the Jedi Council, but nobody here can see anything except in terms of personal ambition."
"Are we both after the same job?"
Neothel asked Jason. It was always hard to tell if Amon Calamari was joking. Jason sensed that there was a tinge of amusement in her mind, but not much.
"I don't want to be a politician," he said. "You'd make a fine chief of state, but I wouldn't."
Neothel's mood changed like the sun coming out, and Jason felt relaxed goodwill and respect. He'd meant what he said. She'd taken it as a deal struck between them.
"What job do you want, then? The Jedi Council?"
"Oh, not that."
She was already seeing him as a rival to Luke. From a political point of view, it had its own inevitability, but she couldn't have known that the Jedi didn't feature in his plans at all.
"I'm not even a master."
He had a moment of cold clarity, in which he saw exactly what he wanted, and it stood outside him, a vision to observe and not be part of.
"What I want is for the trillions of ordinary people in the galaxy to be able to get on with their lives, knowing that it's being run by a stable form of government. The vast majority of folk just get smashed by the fallout from the power struggles of a handful. I want to see that stop. I want to see power meaning duty, service, not a prize."
Neothel adjusted her tunic, straightening the braid fastening.
"Well said. For someone whose whole family is an elite, you have a refreshingly military take on the exercise of power."
Jason had cut free from his attachment to a heroic reputation, but it was comforting to be reassured that he wasn't deluding himself. He savored a small moment of relief and dreamed of a secure galaxy for Tenel Ka and Alana.